Chapter 6, Abused Children Impacting Education, Supporting Educators. Quote, "Public education does not serve a public. It creates a public. And in creating the right kind of public, the schools contribute towards strengthening that kind of public. The schools contribute towards strengthening the spiritual basis of the American creed. That is how Thomas Jefferson understood it, Horace Mann understood it, and John Dewey understood it. And in fact, there is no other way to understand it." End quote. From the book The End of Education by author Neil Postman, published by Knopf in 1995. Neglect causes chronic problems that interfere with learning and adjusting to social situations. For abused children, school becomes more of an exercise in adapting to others, as an outsider does, and avoiding more punishment from adults than an exercise in learning. Maladapted children fight, scream, swear, and are often a danger to themselves and the people around them, a very real danger. Violence in and around schools is a significant problem. Quote, 28% of teachers felt that physical conflict among students was a serious to moderate problem. 32% of teachers felt unsafe in their schools after hours. End quote. From the book Schools, Violence, and Society by author Alan Hoffman, Prager Press, Westport, Connecticut. 20% of Chicano Latino ninth graders had been threatened or injured with a weapon on school property, compared to 7% of white ninth graders. On average, 9% of Minnesota 12th graders and 15% of Minnesota 9th graders were threatened or injured with a weapon on school property. From the article Getting It All Together, from the publication The Health and Well-Being of Minnesota Youth. When I attended an inner-city high school, violence, drugs, and dropout rates were a fraction of what they are today. The sister high school to the one I graduated from reported a graduation rate of less than 30% this year. It also had a number of incidents with weapons. It is a school where teachers regularly fear for their own safety. Students with a desire to learn have a hard time getting a quality education in this harsh and failing environment. It is not because teachers don't care or are unqualified, but because the behaviors of students with emotional and mental health problems are so disrupting and dangerous. There are a growing number of unmanageable public schools. In many communities, school violence is unbearable. Quality teachers and administrators leave troubled systems to find less stressful work. Students are sucked into the world of gangs and violence to belong and to stay safe. Much of what occurs within the classrooms and school hallways is acted out on community streets. Far too many children have heard shots fired and seen dead and wounded classmates. For almost 20 years, the U.S. has led all the other industrialized nations in statistical comparisons of murder, crime, per capita rates of incarceration, and prison populations. Without support from the community, schools struggle to provide only safety and instruction to their pupils. Exceptional students are frustrated because it takes more to challenge them, while most resources and attention go to the squeaky wheels of abused and neglected children. As schools become poorer, there is less and less to attract the average student. Troubled children demand a great deal of teacher time and attention to keep from spinning out of control. Teachers need support to handle abused and neglected children in their classrooms. I watched a 9-year-old girl seriously hurt a public school teacher who was only trying to stop the girl from hurting herself. After she brutally kicked, bit, and gouged him, he smacked her head on a thick oak railing to save himself. It was terrible. I don't know what I would have done under the circumstances. You had to be there. What teacher signs on for this duty? How many teachers are aware of the depth of the mental health issues that their students bring into the classroom with them? It is not unusual to hear about teachers spending over half of their time managing one or two very troubled children. These are the children with mental health issues who need help to grow their skills so they can sit through an hour-long math class without exhibiting unmanageable behaviors. Comprehensive and long-term programs for troubled youth will go a great deal farther than the get-tough policies of incarceration and punishment. Could we create jobs for some of these children? Open recreation centers? Offer adequate counseling and tutoring programs? More than enough studies have proved that we are wasting our money on boot camps and incarceration for children and juveniles. boot camps and incarceration only exacerbate the development of more rage and less skill building. From October 2002 to October 2003, 460,000 American high school students dropped out of high school. In Minneapolis, Minnesota, 48% of African American boys dropped out of school in 2002. In America, almost 25% of teenagers surveyed admitted to using drugs in the 2002-2003 school year, consistent with past five-year average. 23% of young African American men graduated from Minneapolis public schools. 129 African American men from Hennepin County were accepted into any college at the University of Minnesota in 4 years. From a speech by Gary Cunningham, May 24, 2004, at the University of St. Thomas Law School. Minneapolis Public Schools reported a four-year graduation rate of 47% in 2002. Roosevelt High School graduated 28% of its students. From the author Syl Jones, Minneapolis Star Tribune, the article called Just Think What Powell Could Do for America's Kids, from December 2004. America ranks 49th in world literacy. From the New York Times, December 2004. America ranks 28th in mathematical literacy. From the New York Times, December 2004. The lifetime cost of allowing one child to drop out of high school and into a life of crime costs between $1.5 and $15 million. From the Children's Defense Fund, 2001. 53 other nations have longer school years than the U.S., which is now ranked 91st among the world's nations in staff-to-student ratios. What if we replaced juvenile boot camps with learning academies, offering well-funded and enjoyable learning experience at the core of the academy? David Strand, author of Our Nation Out of Step, has captured the harsh realities of our attitudes and values. I am alarmed by the hostile nature of the environment that we adults have created and now tolerate for our nation's children. David has worked in 18 of the 23 advanced democracies and lived in 4 of them. He points out how America now compares itself with emerging and third world nations, and how we have come to ignore how we rank against the other 800 million people in developed democracies. Today, we compete with the poverty-stricken, repressed regimes of third world countries as a benchmark for more and more quality of life indicators, mortality, literacy, early childhood education, lifting children out of poverty, and crime. A leading international indicator for the health and well-being of a nation's children are its schools. American schools have been chronically underfunded for years. The issues of school funding and school performance are becoming the same sort of political football that crime and incarceration have become. Establishing programs for children after school hours with meaningful activities and supervision could cut crime in this country dramatically. We are a nation of two working parents. Many are unable to afford after-school programs for their children. Unwatched and unwanted children are left to their own designs. Without positive role models, children can find themselves in trouble that lasts a lifetime and costs our communities the peace and tranquility enjoyed by most of the world's other developed nations. Religious groups, the media, student groups, civic groups, and parents could be organized and involved to bring positive and active involvement into schools at all levels. Many models for successful volunteer strategies exist. Most schools have a hard time managing volunteer activities. Children in school systems will benefit when they learn how to attract, organize, and work with community volunteers for a vast array of proven programs. There is a growing public anger and frustration aimed at the administrators and teachers of the school systems. There is very little understanding of the complex social issues that contribute to the negative statistics and all-too-human results we read about in the paper. Criticizing teachers, school administrators, and school funding has become a political vote-getter that distracts us from the real issues. We are growing away from valuing better schools and caring about student achievement and towards less support for teachers and schools in general. The Leave No Child Behind mentality is causing even the best teachers and administrators to look and feel like failures. People who dedicate their lives to the noble profession of teaching are being blamed for the failure of public education. Politicians have little justification for their assault on teachers, schools, and administrators. The promise of money, fame, or power does not attract people to teaching. Teachers teach because they love learning, children, and making a difference. We should be ashamed of the degrading assertions that teachers are shirking their work, or administrators are throwing money away, or in regressive communities, how immigrants are ruining our schools. Quote, teachers make less than accountants, architects, doctors, lawyers, engineers, judges, health professionals, auditors, and surveyors. They can earn higher salaries teaching in Berlin, Tokyo, Ottawa, or Amsterdam than in New York or Chicago. End quote. From the author Benjamin R. Barber and the book Passion for Democracy from Princeton, New Jersey, University Press, 1996. Based on 2000 census data, here are the four lowest paid jobs in Minnesota and their annual wages as reported in the Minnesota Women's Consortium June 9th Bulletin. Food preparation, $17,253. Food preparation and serving, $17,132. Child care, $16,493. And dishwashing, $14,002. Quote, the state of Massachusetts discovered that 59% of teaching candidates flunked a basic reading and writing test. For math, the failure rate climbed to 63%. In our free market economy, you usually get what you pay for. New public school teachers spend an average of 6 years in their profession before leaving to pursue a different career. End quote. From author David Strand and the book Nation Out of Step. Poor pay, radical federal mandates, impossibly difficult inner-city classrooms, continued underfunding, and negative rhetoric of the press and politicians all make for a much less appealing way to earn a living than it did even 20 years ago. Business continues to attract the talent that once filled our schools. Teachers are leaving their chosen profession and entering business. Can you blame them? Quote, if we really valued schooling, we'd pay teachers what we pay stockbrokers. If we valued books, we'd spend a little something on the libraries so that adults could read too. If we valued citizenship, we'd give national service and civic education more than pilot status. If we valued children, we wouldn't let them be abused, manipulated, impoverished, and killed in their beds by gang war, crossfire, and stray bullets. End quote. From the author Benjamin R. Barber and the book Passion for Democracy, Princeton, New Jersey, University Press, 1996. As a guardian ad litem talking to teachers and school administrators, it appears that the impact of hundreds of thousands of abused and neglected children on our public schools has been understated. I have read many case histories as a guardian ad litem. Access to personality disorders, bipolar, attention deficit disorder, ADHD, developmentally disabled, neurosis, psychosis, are common to children who have lived with neglect and abuse. Most of the children I have worked with took daily drug regimens of Prozac, Ritalin, amphetamines like Adderall and Dexedrine, and other stimulant drugs. Ritalin is a Schedule II stimulant, similar to amphetamines and cocaine, and has the same dependency profile of cocaine. Well-monitored and administered drug regimens allow many children to function in society. I have come to appreciate how important these drugs are and how complicated their proper monitoring and administration is. We have come to rely too much on prescriptions and not nearly enough on therapy, human contact, and programs to help abused children manage their compulsive behaviors. Sweden removed Ritalin in 1968 because of widespread abuse. America has a fantastic number of children dependent upon psychotropic medications who are not receiving adequate mental health therapy. Many troubled and medicated youth are mainstreamed into already overcrowded classrooms, generally with no preparation or specific training given to the teachers who must deal with them. This complicates teachers providing a quality education to the rest of their students. Severely abused and neglected children have had permanent changes in their brain structure. They have learned an entire complex set of behaviors, making them anxiety-ridden and fearful in an average classroom situation. Invisible children can be a terror to the teacher and other students. Attention deficit disorder is compounded by fear of failure, which leads to more tension, which leads to more symptoms, which produces more fear. it is a neurotic cycle that we now treat mainly with drugs. Rather than teaching children how to relieve their stress and anxiety, we rely on Class II stimulant drugs. It's a terrible waste of resources to park disturbed children in classrooms, put them on Class II stimulant drugs, and hope for the best. But at this, America is practiced. It is the norm. There are many teachers with two or three of these troubled children in their classrooms. Wisconsin's graduation rate for African-American students was 41% in 2001, about half of the rate for white students. Minnesota has similar statistics. Thousands of neurotic and psychotic children in the public school system appear to be almost invisible to educators, administrators, and the public. We have known for years that 50 to 75% of the children in the juvenile justice system have diagnosable mental illnesses. These children pass through the public school system and are expected to graduate. Only a small fraction of the children who need mental health services receive them. Because our institutions wait until a child has shown extreme behaviors before prescribing mental health services, therapy often appears to have poor or sporadic success. Child protection workers know which children need therapy and could make quick and effective use of mental health services that would be effective if this were a policy. There are fewer than 100 child psychiatrists in the state of Minnesota. There are about 800 students to each school counselor in the state of Minnesota. Many other states have similar ratios. We do not understand or value the effects of hypervigilance and other psychological responses to rape, violence, drugs, and insanity have on our children. Statistics for mental illness for children within the child protection system are hard to find, but I believe that they are similar to the statistics within the juvenile justice system. 50 to 75% have diagnosable mental illness. Without much attention, American schools have been forced to provide protection and education to thousands of disturbed and troubled children. I say protection, but there may not be an adequate word that denotes the relationship between the teacher and the troubled children we are describing. Most teachers have limited training to provide mental health services, and they are not good substitutes for professional mental health service providers. Even the best schools rarely provide adequate mental health services for their students. Teachers have few choices besides removal and punishment when working with traumatized children. Without alternatives like therapy and counseling, all that's left is legally drugging children, punishment, and expulsion. People trained in dealing with abused and traumatized children know that more punishment does not work. It's a vicious cycle. More castigation and humiliation only strengthens a student's resolve to fight back to gain some control over their own life. Understanding a child's fears and motivations can help dramatically in rehabilitating them back into society. As long as physical correction, embarrassment, and tough measures are used as discipline, abused and neglected children will continue to fail at school, and schools will continue to fail the child and the public. There is no dignity or achievement in this for anybody. From the Statistical Record of Children, Trends in the Well-Being of America's Children and Youth, 2001, quote, a minimum of 7.5 million, at least 12% of the 63 million children in this country, are in need of mental health services for emotional or other problems. Of the 7.5 million, the mental health problems of 3 million of those children are serious or severe. Some estimates suggest as many as 9.5 million children may be in need of mental health treatment. 2 million children receive outpatient mental health treatment each year. The U.S. Office of Technology Assessment estimates that 70 to 80% of American children in need of treatment may not be receiving it. End quote. Mental illness and the issues surrounding the treatment of invisible children stand out as the most significant challenges facing us today. We must build awareness for our political leaders to positively support mental health issues. 32% of homeless adults had been told by a doctor or nurse within the previous 2 years that they have schizophrenia, manic depressive, some other type of delusional disorder, major depression, antisocial personality disorder, or post-traumatic stress disorder. 28% of the men and 41% of the women indicated that they had been physically mistreated as children. Reported from Minnesota Statewide Survey of Persons Without Permanent Shelter, 2001. A British study showed that British children living in poverty are 3 times more likely to suffer mental illness than children from wealthier families are. They are also more likely to die in the first year of life, die from childhood accidents, and they live shorter lives than children from wealthier families. From the End Child Poverty Campaign, April 2001. Even though great strides have been made in mental health therapies, our institutions don't provide adequate mental health services for children. Psychotic and neurotic children become mentally ill adults with little or no mental health treatments. Classroom teachers are not made aware of the mental health problems or the drug regimens their students bring with them to class. The state of New Jersey dropped mental health services to students in the public school system in 2004. Disobedient students are being pushed directly into the justice system. 15 to 20% of those students were being passed on to the criminal justice system, where they are likely to remain. In 2004, Minnesota had 472 failing schools. Politicians work for more testing, less funding, and more accountability. The public and the media continued to grind down morale and question the performance of educators and schools we used to embrace. We hold teachers responsible for the poor support and condition of the educational institutions we refuse to fully fund. How demoralizing it must be to be a teacher. In 2004, Minnesota was one of 12 states to lose federal funding under Title I, the largest source of federal funds for elementary and secondary education. Quote, Title I schools in New York City lost $657 million. Disabled pupils lost $513 million. And teacher training programs lost $39 million. End quote. From the magazine The Nation, April 19, 2004. Which meant, quote, there was $17 million less for computers in poor communities and $12 million less for programs that included nurses and counselors. New York City has more poor kids, more dropouts, lower graduation rates, lower reading scores, more violence, and larger class sizes than anywhere else. End quote. The Nation, April 19, 2004. New York state courts have taken over management of the state schools in 2004 because of massive school failures. Several states are in the process of suing the federal government for failing to provide adequate support to the public schools. Few of us talk about political footballs, negative public and media attention towards education. Fewer still recognize the impact of inadequate funding or disturbed children on the schools. It's easier to point out failure and blame those people than to think through the complex social issues that are involved. Blaming immigrants, teachers, or administrators is unfair, and it only serves to cause undeserved pain and distract us from the real issues. The cry for school vouchers gets louder every year. Not much is said about why teachers are willing to teach in private schools for reduced salaries. Many of those teachers will tell you it is because they love teaching, but do not have the ability to deal with the serious problems of uncontrollable children. These children are automatically guaranteed to be in the classrooms of inner-city schools and not in the classrooms of private schools. Many teachers, escapees, have purposely left a public school system for a private school system, exchanging higher paychecks for safety and sanity. Inner-city schools have fewer resources and more troubled and mentally ill children than suburban schools. Suburban schools are filled with the children of educated parents who provide their kids with a preschool education. Suburban kids have vocabularies 4 and 5 times larger than the poorer children within the inner city do. Poor, troubled inner-city children with emotional and mental health problems find it much harder to succeed in schools than their bright and capable suburban counterparts. Behaviors for functioning in school and in public are not delivered to a child by an unknown force at a given age. Children with parents that are unable to help them acquire the skills necessary for getting along have to do with what they have. Teachers and police try to deal civilly with uncivil children who too soon have their own opportunity to be fathers and mothers. Social workers need better training to identify and speak to the severity of the mental health issues they encounter. All parties need to learn how to speak to and monitor seriously damaged children. Our systems are not functioning to solve these problems. Many of our institutional policies exacerbate the problems. A lack of resources leads to poorly trained providers and inadequate services. To ignore the interrelatedness of the issues is to guarantee continued failure. How many teachers, police, administrators, and even social workers are in over their heads when it comes to effectively dealing with a traumatized, abused child? Would it not be useful for a teacher to know that a quarter of her students were prescribed Prozac? At least she would be able to guess at what caused great mood swings and behavior changes in some of her students. At a dinner at her home with longtime friends and educators, the subject of who's to blame for failing schools came up. My friends blame immigrants within our schools as a big reason for struggling schools. The big expense for English as second language classes and providing services to children not like us is stretching their capacity for tolerance. Immigrants today are like the immigrants our ancestors were. They work hard, learn fast, and meld into society. America has always been a nation of immigrants. Blaming them solves nothing. It only distracts us from what is really destroying us. We are living in a time when the drums of divisive politics have turned us from an open and compassionate community to a fearful and divided society distrustful of immigrants and minorities. In 1910, the peak year for immigration to Minnesota, 29% of the state's population was born outside the country. District-wide, less than 4% of the population currently hails from another country. Fed Gazette from 2004. Where were your great-grandparents in 1910? More troublesome to our troubled school systems than immigrants is the fact that the federal government has not fulfilled its commitment to pay for 40% of the cost of special education, which was promised by Congress almost 30 years ago. That failed payment cost the state of Minnesota nearly $250 million annually. Designing an educational system that addresses the mental health issues of a significant proportion of the youth who are in the classrooms will bring better results than pretending the problem doesn't exist or blaming other factors. Choking off funding and incarcerating children has proven to be an ineffective and costly approach to the problem. Quote, "The who problem of American education seems to come down to this. In American society, almost everyone identifies intellectual excellence with elitism. This attitude not only guarantees the monopolization of educational advantage by the few, it lowers the quality of elite education itself and threatens to bring about a reign of universal ignorance." End quote. From the book by Christopher Lash, The Culture of Narcissism, 1991. Families provide the greatest portion of a child's learning experience. Most poor children have at least one parent working full-time, and many have both parents working. Limited education and economic hardship make it difficult for poor people to provide their children with what they need to succeed. America now trails most of the industrialized world in the percentage of children living in poverty. Pre-K kindergarten programs are extremely important. The educational advantage that average children have over poor children the day they start kindergarten is huge. In one recent study, the vocabulary of middle-class children was almost 5 times greater than the vocabulary of poor children. I estimate that the vocabulary of children in the child protection system to be significantly less than the vocabulary of the average poor child. Limited vocabularies combined with emotional and mental health problems ensure that most abused and neglected children are learning impaired in the classroom. When these children start school, they do not have the tools to learn. Beginning their educational careers, these abused and neglected children are far behind their classmates. They need early training to be able to succeed, or they will remain underperformers, dropouts, and a failing part of our state institutions. Wealthy citizens have removed themselves from what used to be the institutions and services common to us all. Their children go to private and suburban schools. Paying for public services they no longer use doesn't please them. People of means are assured of excellent education, good quality daycare, and adequate personal time with their own children. American voters have made quality education and daycare and the concept of relaxed home time an unaffordable luxury for poor people. It is not uncommon for people earning $6 or $7 an hour to pay $140 per week for daycare. At $8 an hour, take-home pay can be below $200 a week. It's impossible to adequately provide for a family on the wages that almost half of American families are earning. No insurance, no daycare, inadequate housing, often living in high-crime neighborhoods where children are not allowed outside to play, have become a big part of our American landscape. Learning occurs in the framework of home and school. Unemployment and low-paying jobs without benefits define a majority of African-American families. It's not that poor people don't work as hard as well-off people. It is simply that no amount of effort will bring them the resources needed to raise a healthy family. If poor families are not supported in their efforts to provide a rich learning environment for their babies, our schools will find invisible children failing in the public school environment and graduating into crime and early pregnancy. There are no shortcuts. We have two choices. One, either we take advantage of the less expensive methods available to us as a society to support parents of poor and neglected children in the early years of learning development through high-quality early childhood programs, or two, we will continue to spend many times those amounts failing to change behaviors and deal with the chaos from these students in our public education system and later our courts. It is important to mention the current draining of talent from the poorer classes and their prevalent graduation into early pregnancy and the juvenile and criminal justice systems. In addition to the cost of institutionalizing so many of our citizens, crime and social disturbance that arise from mistreating the problems, there is the cost of lost social capital. Social capital is the value of the individual to society. It could be argued that America has done well because we have invested in our children, and those children have gone on to build a rich and productive nation. Too many fine young minds and talented children are unable to overcome their childhood and are destined to a life of crime and drugs. Early childhood learning and attention to mental health problems will go a long way towards returning these children to a productive life within their own community. The difference between that poor kid and a criminal is about 8 years. Quoting Minnesota Chief Justice Kathleen Blatz. Call to action. Support your community schools, teachers, immigrants, poor people, and abused children. Stand up for the current group at the bottom of the barrel. Most of us have been championed at one time. We are lucky people. It's our turn to return the favor. We know in our hearts that it is not the immigrants, teachers, or children who are wrecking education. It is nearsighted public policy, poor legislative stewardship, and the lack of our support for programs that actually work. Preschool programs are affordable, well-run, and common throughout the rest of the industrialized world. Only the U.S. makes early childhood learning and daycare unaffordable to poor people. Providing parenting services, social service programs, and teaching young mothers the importance of good child rearing will benefit all of us. Baby wins, mother wins, and healthier children will find it easier to learn when they are of school age. Well-reared children will more likely graduate from high school and more likely become contributing members to society. Teaching mothers to cease smoking, drinking, and using drugs before childbirth helps prevent severe physical illness and handicaps, as well as future maltreatment. By linking parents with other health and human services, we can reduce the stresses that create maltreatment. Become a champion of early childhood development programs. Involve your friends, neighbors, and legislators.